Wilman thought that Daff might burst a vein when Carl Miller told them what had happened on the roof of the jail. The sheriff's face turned bright red with rage.
Is there anybody in this damn town who could do anything right except me?
It was just a bad break, boss.
The three men were in the back room of the hardware store, directly across the street from the jail. Dav had made this his temporary headquarters, since he was displaced from the sheriff's office. Four deputies were in the front of the store, kneeling at the windows they had knocked out with their rifle barrels. The other three deputies were positioned around the jail to act as snipers, if any of the defenders holed up in there tried to sneak out.
What do we do now? There's a hole in the roof. Reckon we could get some men through there and catch them in a crossfire.
We don't have enough men for that. We'd have to split our force, and then we wouldn't have enough men to carry the battle on either front.
Well, there's always waiting them out. You know they don't have much to eat or drink in there, Sheriff. We can keep them pinned down for a day or two, and they'll start getting mighty hungry and thirsty.
We could do that, but we're not going to. That wouldn't be enough to show the rest of the townspeople that they'd better not ever try anything like this again.
A short time earlier, Wellman had been horrified as he listened to Dav and Miller hatching the plan to drop dynamite down the stovepipe and blow up the jail. He was only one man, though. There was nothing he could do to stop them. So he wasn't surprised when Dav continued to be obsessed with the idea of teaching the citizens of Chico a lesson.
Carl, I want you to go out there under a flag of truce and ask for a parley.
A parley? About what? We've got them trapped in there. They can't get out. They're beat.
Tell them they have until 8 o'clock in the morning to surrender.
They won't do it.
I don't care about that. Just tell them.
Why 8 o'clock?
Because the sun will be up by then, and everybody will be able to see what happens next.
Well, all right. I'll tell them that 8 o'clock is the deadline. Do I tell them what happens if they don't surrender by then?
No. They'll find out then along with everybody else.
Dav turned toward the hardware store's rear door and motioned to Wellman.
Come on, Edgar. You're going with me.
Once John Henry reached a decision, he didn't spend a lot of time brooding about it. He had placed his trust in Steve Buckner, and he left it at that. If Buckner betrayed his trust, he would deal with that when the time came. For now, he checked to see how everyone downstairs was doing. Amazingly, the jail's defenders had suffered no injuries. A few bullets had come through the loopholes in the wall, but they hadn't hit anyone. Wilhelm and Ben were the only casualties the townspeople had suffered so far. Kate came up to John Henry.
Is it true? Did you really turn Steve Buckner loose and give him a gun?
It's true.
Why would you do that? He works for Sheriff Dav.
Obviously, Turnage hadn't gone into detail about the reason that had prompted Buckner's change of heart. John Henry didn't think he ought to, either. That was something for Buckner and Kate to work out, if they survived this night. He was saved from having to answer Kate's question by one of the townsmen posted at the loopholes.
Somebody just came out of the hardware store holding a white flag. I think it's Deputy Miller.
John Henry went over to the wall and motioned the man aside. He put his eye to the little opening and saw that the townie was right. Carl Miller stood on the boardwalk in front of the hardware store, holding a lantern in one hand and a piece of board with a white flag tied to it in the other. Miller looked distinctly nervous as he stepped down into the street and walked forward slowly. The deputy had good reason to be nervous. It would have been easy for the men in the jail to shoot him while he was out in the open like this. They were all basically decent individuals, though, so it would have seemed too much like murder to gun Miller down under these circumstances.
What do we do, Marshal?
It's probably a trick. Don't trust him, Marshal.
I don't intend to, but I need to find out what he wants.
John Henry went to one of the windows and lifted the bar off the shutters.
That's far enough, Miller.
Miller came to a stop.
Is that you, Cobb?
That's Six Killer. Deputy United States Marshal Six Killer.
All right, I got a message for you, Marshal, from Sheriff Dav.
Dav's no longer the sheriff in this town. I've removed him from office and declared martial law.
That's between you and the sheriff, mister. All I'm doing is delivering a message. You got until 8 o'clock in the morning to come out of there and surrender.
What happens if we don't?
Never mind about that. You better do it, that's all.
John Henry knew what would happen if they did surrender. Dav was loco enough that he might line them all up and have them shot. Or something even worse.
You've delivered your message, Miller. Tell Dav nobody's coming out.
Now that's up to you. Just remember, I got this white flag. We still got us a truce.
John Henry turned, took the rifle from the man standing next to him, thrust the barrel through the loophole, and drew a quick bead. Dirt spurted from the ground 10 feet in front of Miller, who whirled around to make a frantic dash for the door of the hardware store.
Maybe I shouldn't have done that, but I just couldn't stomach any more of him.
What do you reckon is gonna happen at 8 o'clock?
Nothing good.
The rain had slacked off to an intermittent drizzle as Wellman walked toward the Hammond mansion with Dav.
Where are we going, Samuel?
The answer to that question was fairly obvious, but he hoped Dav would explain what he had in mind. The closer they came to Lucinda's house, the more worried Wellman was.
I'm going to get some leverage, and you're going to help me, Edgar.
What do you want me to do?
I doubt if Mrs. Hammond would open the door for me at this time of night, but she will for you.
I'm not sure I want to be any part of this. Lucinda is my friend.
Exactly. So I want you to look out for her best interests.
That's true, I do.
So you can either help me, or I'll kick her door down, and whatever happens after that will be on your head, not mine.
Oh, all right. Just tell me what you want me to do.
Lights were burning inside the Hammond mansion. That came as no surprise to Wellman. With all the shooting going on in town, not to mention the huge explosion on the roof of the jail, probably everyone in Chico was awake tonight except the youngest children, and perhaps the very old and hard of hearing. The houses might be dark, and certainly no one was going to venture out unless they had to, but people would be awake, holding each other in the dark and trying not to tremble in fear. Not Lucinda Hammond, though. She wasn't the sort to cower in the shadows. A brass lion's head knocker was set in the middle of the big front door. Tentatively, Wellman took hold of it.
Who's out there?
It's me, Lucinda. Edgar Wellman.
Dev was standing to the side of the door where Lucinda couldn't see him if she looked out. Wellman was sick inside, feeling as if he were betraying her, which was exactly what he was doing. He still didn't know what Dav was going to do, but if he hurt her, Wellman made a vow that he would kill Dav himself. It was an empty, hollow promise. He always ran away from trouble. He didn't charge right into it head on. Lucinda was standing there in a silk dressing gown. She had a shotgun in her hands. At the sight of the rain-soaked newspaper man standing on her front porch, her eyes widened.
Good Lord, Edgar, you look like a wet dog.
She lowered the shotgun and took a step toward him. That brought her over the threshold of the doorway. Wellman couldn't take it anymore. Something snapped inside him.
Lucinda, get back inside. Dav...
That was as far as he got before Dav sprang out of the shadows, striking like a big cat. The gun in his hand smashed into Wellman's head. Lucinda tried to raise the shotgun, but Dav grabbed the barrels and wrenched the weapon aside, tearing it loose from her grip. He clamped his hand around her upper left arm to jerk her completely out of the house and onto the porch.
You're coming with me, my dear.
Wellman struggled to his feet again. Dev kicked Wellman in the belly.
Let her go!
Might as well stop fighting. You're coming with me, Lucinda, and if those friends of yours want to save your life, they'll give themselves up.
Wellman found the strength to pull himself to his feet. Dav had almost reached the gate in the fence around the mansion's front yard. Wellman lurched toward the long shape that lay in the grass and reached down to pick it up. He lifted the shotgun and stumbled after Dav and Lucinda.
Let her go! Let her go or I'll kill you, Dav!
The sheriff must have heard something in Wellman's voice that alarmed him. Still holding tightly to Lucinda, he twisted around and brought up the gun in his other hand.
Looks like I'll have to find some other scribbler to write stories about me. Well, he wasn't all that good at it anyway.
John Henry stayed on the move, even though there weren't really all that many places to go in the sheriff's office and jail. But he circulated among the defenders, talking to them and trying to keep their spirits up. And he went upstairs to the cell block fairly often to check on Buckner, too. During one of those visits, he spoke with Buckner.
Have you seen Aaron tonight?
Kemp? I ran into him earlier, just as all this was getting started.
I reckon he's dead, then.
He wasn't the last time I saw him. I knocked him out and dragged him into an alley. Didn't see any reason to kill him. Not then, anyway.
And what about later?
I've traded shots with several of Dav's men. I didn't recognize any of them as Kemp, but the light wasn't that good most of the time.
Aaron ain't a bad sort, you know. He's like me. He got used to taking the easy road. That meant breaking the law sometimes. Once you've done that, it's hard to get back on the other side. But he never shot anybody who didn't have it coming. I'm talking about gents who are a lot worse than we were. Now, I don't expect a law dog like you to see it this way, Six Killer. But all owl hoots ain't the same.
I know that, but it's not up to me to decide such things. My job's just to bring them in and let the court sort things out.
And if they don't want to be brought in?
My authority extends to the use of force.
Which is law talk for shooting them.
Sooner or later, everybody's got to make up their mind which side they're on.
Well, I won't ask you not to shoot Aaron if it comes down to that. I don't reckon that'd be right.
I appreciate that.
Which ain't the same thing as saying that I'll shoot him. I just hope I'll never have to make that choice.
Any sign of trouble up here?
Not a bit. Haven't heard anything going on up there on the roof. You know, you ought to turn Gil Hobart loose, too. He'd help you like I am.
I'll think about it. John Henry had already considered the possibility of freeing the former jailer in return for a promise that Hobart would fight on their side. Right now, though, it didn't seem to be necessary as the standoff continued. The hours of the night dragged by. No one was really in any danger of dozing off. The defenders were all too keyed up to sleep. They knew it was possible, even likely, that these were their last hours on Earth. Going through something like that did a lot to clear a man's mind of any clutter. Finally, gray light began to filter through the cracks around the window shutters. Dawn was approaching. Kate came over to John Henry.
It'll be 8 o'clock in less than an hour. Dav's deadline.
You think we ought to surrender?
I'd rather die fighting than be lined up in front of a firing squad or whipped to death.
He wouldn't do that to you.
He was willing to blow me up along with the rest. But you're probably right. I'm sure the sheriff would have some other, more suitable punishment in mind for me.
John Henry didn't want to add to her worries, but he figured she was right about that. There was still a can of peaches on the desk. He picked it up and handed it to her.
Why don't you take this up to Buckner?
You think so?
Wouldn't hurt.
Maybe Buckner would work up the courage to tell her why he had changed sides. Maybe not. That wasn't really any of his business. A short time later, he took out his watch and opened it. His instincts were telling him time was up, and he saw that they were right. The watch's hands had just ticked over to 8 o'clock.
Something's happening across the street.
John Henry went to a window and unfastened the shutters. Turnage and Peabody Farnham were beside him. The rest of the defenders crowded to the other window. John Henry saw men moving around behind the false front of the hardware store, but he couldn't tell what they were doing.
Should we take some pot shots at him?
Hold on. I want to see what Dav is up to.
A second later, they all got the answer to that question as something rose into sight on the roof of the hardware store, lifted by several of Dav's men. Two thick beams had been nailed and lashed together to form a crude cross. And hanging from it, bound by her wrists and ankles, was the figure of a woman.
Oh my God, that's Lucinda Hammond! That bastard! That unholy bastard!
The widow of the man Dav gunned down a while back?
That's right. Can you tell if she's still alive?
I think so. Yes, she just moved her head. She's alive.
Oh, thank God for that, anyway.
Dav's men scuttled back away from the cross, which remained upright. They must have nailed together some sort of frame that would hold it up.
Hello, the jail. You hear me in there?
That's Dav.
We hear you.
Take a good look at Mrs. Hammond. If you don't come out and surrender, I'll leave her hanging up there for as long as it takes. You think she'll make it through the day? I don't. She's already having trouble breathing.
He's not giving us any choice. We can't let that poor woman hang there and die.
If we surrender, he'll kill us all. I can't do that.
We have to go out sometime. Might as well make a fight of it. Maybe he'll spare Miss Hammond if we do.
It's up to you, but the sun's going to be mighty hot before the day's over.
Don't listen to him. Don't give up. Don't let him...
The black snake of a bullwhip struck, curling around to lash across her legs. Several of the men inside the sheriff's office started toward the door.
Hold it! Nobody's going out there yet.
This is unbearable. I'm sorry, Marshal, but he's one. We can't allow him to torture her.
We're not going to. Hold everybody together, Alvin. I'm counting on you.
All right. What are you gonna do?
Take the fight to Dav.
John Henry hurried to the storeroom and found a bucket, then carried it and one of the Winchesters up the stairs to the cell block. He was aware of Turnage, Farnham, and the other man watching him curiously, but he didn't take the time to explain his hastily formed plan. When he reached the corridor between the cells, he found Buckner and Kate standing there. An unmistakable tension existed between them, hanging in the air so thickly it was almost like a physical presence.
What's going on down there? We heard some yelling.
Dav's using Mrs. Hammond as a hostage to try to lure us out.
Oh, dear Lord, that poor woman. What's he done?
Quickly, John Henry sketched in the details.
I did the right thing by changing sides. Dav's gone plumb loco.
He always was. He just hid it from everyone until after he was elected. Then he set out to destroy us.
He's not going to get away with it.
John Henry handed Buckner the keys.
If you're sure we can trust him, turn Hobart loose. He can cover us.
Where are we going?
Out there, after Dav.
He's probably got riflemen posted around the jail, waiting for us to make a break.
That's why we're going to make it more difficult for them.
John Henry went into the cell that Buckner had occupied and started ripping up the bedding. He tore pieces off the mattress, too, and stuffed them into the bucket along with the torn-up sheet and blanket. When he had filled the bucket, he doused the contents with coal oil from a can of the foul-smelling stuff that sat in a corner where it could be used to fill the lamps. Then he went into the wrecked cell, avoiding the mangled body of the deputy who had been killed in the collapse of the roof, and found some broken pieces of board long enough for him to lean them in the hole in the roof. They formed a makeshift ramp.
What in the world?
Hand me that bucket.
Kate did so. Buckner and Hobart came up behind her, looking equally puzzled. John Henry climbed up the boards until he could reach up and set the bucket on the roof at the edge of the jagged hole. He got a match from his pocket. Then he dropped it into the oil-soaked bedding. The morning breeze caught the smoke and began spreading it across the roof. John Henry turned his head to look down at the others.
Buckner, you're coming with me. Hobart, you follow us as far as the roof, and when Dav's men start shooting at us, you give us some covering fire. When we're clear, throw the bucket off the roof so it doesn't catch the building on fire.
Where are we headed?
We'll have to jump to the building next door. The building on the other side of it is only one story. If we make it to the roof of that one, we can get to the ground from there. Then we go after Dav. Simple as that.
Yeah, simple. Also downright crazy.
Well, I never figured on living forever.
John Henry pulled an extra Colt from his waistband and tossed it down to Buckner.
You coming?
Right behind you.
Buckner turned and handed his rifle to Hobart.
You with us, Gil?
Damn right!
John Henry scrambled up through the hole in the roof. The smoke from the bucket wasn't thick enough to hide him completely, but it had to be obscuring the vision of the riflemen posted around the jail. John Henry broke into a crouching run. Buckner pulled himself through the hole and lunged after him. Hobart emerged from the opening a couple of seconds later and stretched out on the roof. The edge of the roof came up pretty quickly. John Henry had his Colt in his hand because he didn't want to risk it falling out of his holster. He launched himself into space. One of Hobart's shots must have scored. The smoke was drifting over this building as well.
You all right, Marshal?
Yeah, let's go.
They sprang up and sprinted for the edge of the building. This jump was easier. John Henry and Buckner lowered themselves, hung side by side from the eaves, and then dropped to the alley floor.
All right, we'll circle around and see if we can get to the hardware store.
I'm with you, Marshal. This is gonna save me some prison time, right?
Maybe, if you live through it.
With guns up and ready, they hurried along the alley and around the rear corner of the building. The shooting continued from the top of the jail as Hobart attempted to pick off some of the deputies. John Henry and Buckner ran along the narrow side street on which they found themselves. They had to get well away from the jail before they cut back over and tried to cross Main Street. Dav, or someone on his side, must have figured out what they were trying to do and moved to cut them off, because suddenly two deputies came running around the corner of a building ahead of them. The men skidded to a halt. John Henry crouched. Buckner aimed at the last man. One of the deputies ran for cover, dragging a blood-stained and bullet-creased leg behind him.
He's liable to get back and tell Dav where we are.
Dav's probably got that figured out by now anyway. One way or another, we'll have to fight our way through to him.
If we can kill him, that'll end this fight. The rest of the bunch will cut their losses and run.
That's what I'm counting on.
When they had covered several blocks without running into any more opposition, John Henry led the way along another alley back to Main Street. The deputies in the hardware store and the townspeople inside the jail were still shooting at each other. John Henry paused at the corner and looked around, checking for any lurking bushwhackers.
All we can do is make a run for it. The men holed up in the hardware store won't have a very good angle to shoot at us.
That don't mean they can't hit us.
No, it doesn't. We're over here and we need to be over there.
I'm not arguing with you, Marshal. I'm ready to go whenever you say the word.
Did you get anything worked out with Kate?
Well, she didn't slap my face when I told her how I feel, so taking that is a good sign. She said we'd talk about it later, when all this is over.
I reckon that's one more good reason to stay alive.
It seemed like the widest street John Henry had ever crossed, even if it wasn't. Having bullets flying around his head tended to alter a fella's perceptions. But at long last, John Henry and Buckner pounded into an alley.
Whew, I ain't used to running like that. I was always taught any chore you can't do from horseback ain't worth doing.
You wouldn't have made much of a farmer then.
No, sir, I sure wouldn't have.
After a minute or two, they were ready to move again. They began working their way along the backs of the buildings on this side of the street, using whatever cover they could find.
How many men you reckon Dav's got left?
8 or 9 altogether. Maybe 1 or 2 less than that.
You really whittled them down.
That was the idea.
If you'd have asked me yesterday whether I thought anybody could break Dav's hold on this town, I'd have said no. I'd have said hell no. And anybody'd be a fool to try. Danged if it ain't started to look like you might pull it off.
I've had plenty of help, and at least 2 good men have died. I don't want their deaths to be for nothing.
Dav comes out on top, a lot more folks will die.
No. And I'll do everything I can to stop that from happening.
They were getting close to the hardware store now. John Henry checked every alley before they crossed the mouth of it, just in case any of the deputies were waiting to bushwhack them. They had just gone past one of those alley mouths. From the sound of it, somebody had just hidden in a rain barrel. John Henry whirled and brought up his gun, and so did Buckner.
Hold it!
They found themselves facing Aaron Kemp, who stood in the rain barrel with water streaming down from his face and clothes. His Colt was leveled at them, but their guns were pointed at him.
Steve, what are you doing with this turncoat?
Take it easy, Aaron. We don't have to do this. That was mighty smart of you hiding in that rain barrel like that, though.
Hey, you didn't answer my question. Have you changed sides?
Yeah, I have. You know good and well that Dav's the craziest hombre we ever crossed trails with, amigo. I mean, good Lord, he's got poor Miss Hammond tied up there on a cross. No man in his right mind would do something like that.
We told the man we'd back his plea. I don't like going back on my word, Steve.
Neither do I. Sometimes things change. We rode in here. We didn't know the job was going to turn out the way it has.
This is about that girl, isn't it? Kate Collins?
She's in the jail with the others. Dav's already tried to kill her once. If he wins, it'll go bad for her, Aaron. Mighty bad.
Damn it! I can't throw down on a man I rode with as long as I have with you.
Kemp lowered his gun.
Yeah, but I'm not gonna turn traitor either. You two go on and do what you have to do. I'm heading for the stable to get my horse and ride away from here.
That's a smart thing to do.
I didn't ask for your opinion, Cobb, or whatever the hell your name is. I'm sure as Blaze is not doing this for you.
You go on, Aaron. We'll cross trails later.
Not if I have anything to say about it. We're not pards anymore, Steve. That's the way it's gotta be.
Kemp climbed out of the barrel and trotted away along the alley without looking back. Buckner watched him go with an expression of regret on his face.
At least the two of you didn't have to shoot each other.
Yeah, there's that to be thankful for. Come on. Dav's liable to have a lookout posted at the back door. Maybe you better let me go first.
Because anybody who's been in the hardware store all night won't know that you're on our side now. That's pretty smart. You wouldn't be thinking of a last-minute double-cross, would you?
If I wanted to kill you, Marshal, I've had plenty of chances before now.
That's right.
John Henry drew back behind the corner of the building.
Go ahead.
Buckner nodded and trotted toward the rear door of the hardware store.
Open up in there! It's Buckner!
Steve! Where the hell have you been? We figured those damn townies must have killed you.
No, I'm here. Come to help you boys. Well, step out here and give me a hand. I got something that'll turn the tide for us.
Well, what is...
John Henry quickly rejoined Buckner.
There's no way of knowing how many men are in there.
Not without going in.
The two men looked at each other, nodded, and charged through the door. 4 men knelt at the front windows, firing at the jail.
Drop your guns! Elevate! In the name of the law!
Even though they were taken completely by surprise, the crooked deputies weren't going to give up without a fight. They whirled around, the rifles in their hands. John Henry returned the fire. Beside John Henry, Buckner's gun was going to work as well. John Henry felt the hot breath of a bullet along his cheek. That left 1 deputy. Buckner took aim. That leaves Dav.
I ain't seen Carl Miller either. He's probably up on the roof with the sheriff.
I guess we can call on them to give up. They can't hope to win now.
You do that and he'll kill Miss Hammond just for spite if he ain't already. We gotta get up there.
John Henry knew Buckner was right.
Let's find a ladder.
There ain't no ladder in here. I don't know how we're gonna get up there.
How about some rope?
Buckner grabbed a coiled lasso from a stack of them.
We got that.
Come on.
They hurried out into the rear alley. John Henry had done a bit of cowboying back in Indian territory. He formed a loop in the rope and looked for some place to throw it. He didn't see any projections that would support their weight, though.
Damn you, Cobb! I know you're down there somewhere. Show yourself, or I'll kill the woman right now.
I'll go out in the street and try to draw him up to the front of the building where you can get a shot at him.
He'll gun you down.
Maybe, but not if you get him first.
All right, we'll give it a try. I don't know what else we can do.
With the lasso still in his hand, John Henry hurried along the passage next to the building. Buckner followed him. They had reached the edge of the street.
Dav! I'm here, Dav!
Get out there in the street where I can see you!
John Henry had spotted something that made him alter his plan. He tapped Buckner on the shoulder and pointed to one of the posts that held up the awning over the boardwalk. It had cracked when the false front fell on the awning, and it was bent in the middle now.
Tie the rope around that post and pull. When it breaks, the awning will collapse and let that false front fall on down at an angle. Maybe I can run up it to the roof.
Without Dav and Miller shooting you on the way?
I'm counting on them being surprised enough to give me a few seconds.
Might as well. It's no crazier than anything else we've done.
John Henry noticed blood on the former deputy's shirt.
You all right?
Yeah, just got a little crease back there. I'll be fine.
While Buckner hurried to the cracked post and began tying the rope around it, John Henry sidled out into the street.
Here I am, Dav.
Tell the people in the jail to hold their fire, or I'll shoot the woman!
Turnage, Farnham, you heard him. Everybody stay out of this. It's between me and the sheriff now.
Dav came to the front of the building where John Henry could see him. The bullwhip still dangled from his hand. Miller stepped up behind him, holding a revolver that was aimed at Lucinda Hammond. Lucinda seemed to have passed out. Her head drooped forward, and her hair hung in front of her face.
Who are you?
Deputy U.S. Marshal John Henry Sixkiller. I was sent here to put a stop to your reign of terror, Dav.
My so-called reign of terror is just starting, Sixkiller. I'll be running this whole territory before I'm through. And then? But there's no need to waste time explaining everything to you. You're gonna be dead in less than a minute.
John Henry glanced at Buckner, who had opened the doors of the hardware store and retreated inside. He gave a tiny nod. Cracked or not, the post didn't break. Obviously, the post wasn't damaged as much as John Henry had thought it was. Then, as John Henry tried to keep the amazement off his face, two huge shapes loomed up behind Buckner, who got out of the way in a hurry as Peabody and Nate Farnham strode past him. They must have seen what he and Buckner were trying to do, gotten out of the jail somehow, and circled around to come in the back of the hardware store. They didn't bother with the rope. Instead, they stepped out onto the boardwalk and wrapped their arms around the post. The awning collapsed and the false front tipped down toward the ground. John Henry lunged forward, breaking into a run that carried him swiftly toward the toppling false front. It landed at an angle, its top wedged against the ground. John Henry bounded onto it, his momentum carrying him up the steep angle. John Henry felt the sharp sting as the whip cracked against his shoulder, but he kept coming. The next strike caught him on the wrist and made him drop his gun, but he was close enough now to tackle Dav. He and John Henry rolled back down the inclined false front. John Henry slammed a punch into Dav's face. Then he flipped the slack of the whip around the sheriff's neck. Wilhelm Heinsdorf had thought that Dav was some sort of supernatural monster, a creature of the darkness that could not be killed. But Samuel Dav was a human being. Terribly flawed, but still a human being. Any human could die. And so he did, on this clear morning, under a blue sky washed clean by the storm of the night before. So much had happened, and now, as he eased his hold on the whip, reaction set in. He was barely aware of what was going on as strong hands gripped him and lifted him to his feet. He looked up and saw several men cutting Lucinda Hammond loose from the cross. Peabody Farnham held him up.
Are you all right, Marshal?
Yeah. Miller?
Dead. He tried to get away when he saw you choking the life out of Dab. That fella Buckner stopped him.
If you want a real sheriff for a change, you might do worse than Buckner.
But he worked for Dab.
A man can change. I reckon Buckner's proved that. What about the other deputies? Were any of them left alive?
Only the ones locked up in the jail. It's all over, Marshal. You saved the town.
We saved the town. All of us together.
Elvin Turnage hurried toward them, a sheaf of papers in his hand.
Marshal, are you all right?
I'll live. What's that you got there?
Something I found in a locked box in Dav's desk, and you need to take a look at it.
It took a moment before John Henry realized what he was looking at. Then he knew that Peabody Farnham had been wrong a few moments earlier. This wasn't over yet. Three days later, John Henry walked into the Palace of the Governors in Santa Fe.
I need to see Governor Wallace.
The governor's aide, Felipe Montoya, stared up at him in obvious surprise.
Senor Sixkiller, you have returned.
I know. Pretty far-fetched, isn't it?
I'll take you to see the governor right now. I know he'll be anxious to hear what you have to say.
Wallace was writing again when Montoya showed John Henry into the office.
Still putting that fella Ben-Hur through his paces?
A chariot race, in fact.
Wallace set his pen aside and stood up to offer John Henry his hand.
Do you have a report for me, Marshal Sixkiller?
I do.
That'll be all, Felipe.
Actually, I'd like for Senor Montoya to stay, if that's all right with you, Governor.
Me? But why?
Because you play an important part in this, Senor.
John Henry reached into his coat. He brought out a folded sheaf of papers and set them on Wallace's desk.
There's my report, along with some other documents, Governor. Samuel Dav is dead, along with a number of the gunmen he hired as deputies. The other so-called deputies are locked up in Chico's jail. It's undergoing some repairs, but it's still sturdy enough to hold those varmints.
I didn't expect you to go in there and clean up the whole town, Marshal.
Then why'd you send me?
Why indeed? It's just rare to find a man who performs his job so efficiently these days. Congratulations, sir.
Well, that's not quite all of it. There's still Senor Montoya's part.
I have no part in this. I'm confused, Governor. I don't know what this man is talking about.
I'm talking about the plan you hatched with Dav to take over the territory. You were going to build him up and get him appointed territorial governor. But you'd be the real power behind him, pulling his strings. I could read between the lines of what you wrote to Dav, even if he couldn't. He'd convinced himself that he would be running things and you'd just be helping him. But it would have been the other way around.
That's insane.
And very confusing. Why in the world would this Samuel Dav be appointed territorial governor? I'm not planning on stepping down from the post anytime soon.
Oh, they were going to assassinate you, Governor. And then, once they were running things, they were going to let the Mexican army come in here and take over. They were going to sell the whole territory back to Mexico. It would have been just about the biggest act of land piracy in history.
He's loco! None of that is true, Governor! It's the ravings of a madman!
It's all right there in the papers, in your writing, Senor. You expected Dav to destroy them, but he didn't. Maybe he was a mite suspicious of you after all, and wanted something to hold over your head if he needed to. Anyway, I guess we should leave the governor to look them over. I expect he'll recognize your hand, Montoya.
The aide's face contorted with hatred. His hand dived under his coat and came out with a small nickel-plated pistol. But John Henry was already moving, stepping forward swiftly. His left hand caught Montoya's wrist and wrenched it aside as the aide fired. John Henry placed the pistol on the desk next to the papers.
I guess that's one more bit of proof, Governor, but it wasn't really necessary. There's plenty there to put Montoya behind bars for a long, long time.
Good Lord, I never suspected. Felipe always seemed like a loyal friend.
Maybe he was once, but people can change.
John Henry thought about Steve Buckner and Edgar Wellman. Buckner had risked his life to put things right in Chico, and Wellman had sacrificed his, trying to save Lucinda Hammond. John Henry had heard about that from Lucinda while she was recovering from the ordeal she had gone through. Yes, people could change. But thankfully, that went both ways. And although Samuel Dav had done a great deal of damage in Chico, both physical and emotional, most of that damage could be repaired. The town would survive and flourish.
You're leaving?
Job's done.
There's that other business I mentioned when you were here before, down in Lincoln County.
I'm sorry, Governor. I'm going home. Six Killer, U.S. Marshal, Book 3, 8 Hours to Die, is a graphic audio production. Copyright 2012, William W. Johnstone and J.A. Johnstone. Published by arrangement with the Kensington Publishing Corporation, all rights reserved. Production copyright 2013, The Cutting Corporation, all rights reserved. Unauthorized download or duplication is prohibited. Performed by Terrence Aselford, Evan Casey, David Jordan, Tim Getman, Richard Cutting, Jeff Allen, Mort Shelby, Colleen Delaney, Tim Carlin, Julianne Elliott, Drew Copas, Joe Brack, Michael Glenn, Gregory Gorton, Christopher Sheeran, Christopher Graybill, Scott McCormick, David Harris, Michael John Casey, Tim Pabone, Joel David Santner, Ken Jackson, Patrick Busink, Eric Messner, Mark Halpern, and Ted Stoddard. Book adapted for graphic audio by Johann Detweiler. Directed by Colleen Delaney. Produced by Rick Rowan and Dwayne Beeman. Executive producers James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornett. Dialogue editing and graphic audio sound design by Damian Choppy Chop Richardson. With original music by Thomas Hogan and Johann Detweiler. If you enjoyed Six Killer U.S. Marshal, read the Pinnacle Edition. Visit www.kensingtonbooks.com. And be sure to look for William W. Johnstone's Brothers O'Brien series, available at Road Stops Everywhere at 1-800-670-5220 or at www.graphicaudio.net, where you'll find samples of all our Action Pump titles, as well as free downloads, audio guides, and podcasts. Keep listening for exciting previews of other thrilling titles in graphic audio.
Ever seen so many outfits camped? Scattered a kingdom come all over the edge of town and up and down the river.
Poor hunting, Nathan. Out of supplies, sick of hunting and not finding anything. Maybe getting a little worried about the Indians. How does it look, CT?
Not good, Gage. Not good. She's cutting mighty thin. You saw how many hunters are camped around town here. They've scoured the whole Arkansas. By spring, there won't be enough hides left to sweat a pair of mules. Indians are restless, too.
Comanches or not, I want to go. The frontier's fading fast. So's the hide game. So I'll take what money I've got and buy wagons with it and supplies. I'll hire me a tough crew and go down where the buffalo are. Sure, I know it's risky, but what that ever amounted to anything wasn't a gamble.
Barber told me you're in the market for wagons and teams.
That's right.
Now, it happens I know a man who has a string of wagons and all the teams you'll need. He'll sell them cheap. Tell you what, you make the rounds and price the wagons and mules that you find. Whatever kind of deal you're offered, my man will do you better, I guarantee you.
Where's your profit, King? You're not doing this for nothing.
They were right about you, Jameson. You're a perceptive man. All right, I have a motive of my own. I wanted to get on your warm side, so you'd let me take my wagons with you into Texas. I wasn't going to make that proposition until I'd built you up for it. But there it is.
Here, take a look. See if there's really a white woman there scraping a hide.
By George, I do believe it is. There, I see a squaw kicking at her. She's a captive right enough.
Shad, I don't know how we're gonna do it, but we're gonna get her out of there.
You're crazy, Jameson. It's not worth the risk. Do you really think you could get that woman out of there?
King, I thought you'd be the first one to say let's go. Now I don't know what to think. I know it's not cowardice.
Of course it's not cowardice. I've got an investment here, a big investment. Do you think I want to throw it away and maybe die too on a 10-to-1 chance of rescuing some woman you saw through a pair of field glasses? How do we know who she is or what she is?
She's a captive woman, King. You can talk all night, but you can't alter that.
You killed Buffalo Finder this morning. I saw him fall.
kills his enemies will take over now, and he'll be after you if you're anywhere on these plains. That's the way he is. He's not human. We can't get away from them. They'll follow us till they're ready, and then they'll come.
Here they come!
Ammunition is no problem right now, so use all you need. Start shooting as soon as you see a target. Thin them out as much as you can before they get here. There'll be more than enough of them left to go around.
Chance!
Elmer Pelton's Buffalo Wagons.
Available now in Graphic Audio.
Graphic Audio presents William W. Johnstone's A Big Sky Christmas.
We better get on back to the wagons while we can.
Wagons? These fellas from a wagon train?
That's right. Bound for Eagle Valley in Montana territory.
Oh yeah, that's a mighty pretty place.
But in case you ain't noticed the chill in the air, it's December. What sort of a dang fool takes a wagon train to Montana this time of year?
You're looking at him.
That's dang fool business.
I'm not arguing the point, but we're here and I'm bound and determined to get those pilgrims where they're going by Christmas. We're talking about going all the way to Montana, not on some picnic lunch. Hundreds of miles of riding in a wagon that's not very comfortable. Miserable weather. Any sign of anybody coming after us?
I didn't see anything but this blasted rain. Ulysses S. Grant could be right behind us with the Army of the Potomac, and I wouldn't know it.
Maybe hostile Indians and outlaws.
Preacher, smoke! Outlaws around the camp!
Engines!
Lots of bad things can happen.
William W. Johnstone's A Big Sky Christmas.
Available now in Graphic Audio.
If you can't find that Graphic Audio title you're looking for, go to www.graphicaudio.net, where you can order it in CD format or digital download. If you're on the road, call 1-800-670-5220. That's 1-800-670-5220, or go to www.graphicaudio.net. And if you're looking for a great way to try out a different Graphic Audio series, or want the complete series now, check out our long-haul MP3 series sets, conveniently shipped to you on a USB flash drive. Available only at www.graphicaudio.net. Be sure to sign up for our monthly newsletter, like us on Facebook, or follow us on Twitter.